from right enough. As much as we received when we were in at the FSD office last time. No, we were nicely fed. I'm not going to waste any more time. I will hand over to the Deputy Minister to lead us in their presentation. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members of the committee, on behalf of the executive authority, who is the Minister of Finance in this instance, I am honored and privileged to lead this delegation from the Financial Services Board to present its annual report for the 2010/11 financial year. As members would know that the vision of the Financial Services Board is to promote and maintain a sound financial investment environment in South Africa, and also that the FSB is responsible for ensuring that regulated entities comply with legislation and capital adequacy requirements for financial soundness and protect the community that invests, that is normally referred to as market conduct. It also regulates and supervises pension funds, friendly societies, long-term and short-term insurance, capital markets, collective investment schemes, and financial advisors and intermediary services. All this is done governed by about 16 pieces of legislation. So on the 1st of April this year, the Financial Services Board celebrated its 20 years of existence, supervising and regulating the non-banking financial services industry in South Africa. So it's just left with 1 year to come of age and be adults, as Honorable correctly points out. This institution, Chairperson, has developed and maintained a very strong and effective presence in the regulatory space, as we would all be aware, over these past two decades in the country and internationally, whilst working very closely with our counterparts in the continent as well. In addition, the Financial Services Board has enhanced its enforcement capabilities and established the Market Abuse Directive, which evolved from the Directorate of Insider Trading and the recent Enforcement Committee. As part of the performance objectives identified for the year under review, the Financial Services Board achieved most of its targets, as you will hear when they report. I do not want to go there, but also did not achieve some of the targets, as the report reveals. I do not want to count those, because that will be dealt with in the report itself. Chairperson, I have no intention of taking time introducing the team. I will allow the Chief Executive to do that. He's going to introduce his team. But let me also indicate that perhaps the format for reporting, Chairperson, in trying to align ourselves with your function of oversight, we have, in our slides, you will realize that we have for ease of reference, put page numbers for those areas that the slide presentation seeks to summarize, so that members are assisted in focusing on the report rather than the slides, because the slides are merely a summary. And what we have also attempted to do in our reporting is to try and follow the same sequence that was followed in tabling the strategic plan, so that the sequence also is not confusing. We tried as much as possible to follow the same sequence that the strat plan followed, in order also to assist us in focusing our attention on the year under review and what it is that we had sought out to do. I trust that would assist members in engaging with us. With those few words, Chairperson and honourable members of the committee, I would like to request that the Chief Executive takes the floor and take us through the slides and spend as little time as possible on the slides in order to allow for time for engagement. Thank you.
Collaboration with our visible and main principal national treasury. And just to give the contents of each and every one of those bills, I'm going to ask our head of legal department to, in short, tell the members what all these bills are about. No good. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the members of the honourable members of the committee. During the period under review, we worked on drafting the Financial Services Laws General Amendment Bill. We also worked on drafting the Financial Markets Bill. We worked on drafting the Credit Rating Agencies, the Credit Rating Services Bill, and the Insurance Laws Amendment Bill. Because National Treasury are the custodians of the whole process, they manage it and until the whole approval process is finished and until the bills are all promulgated. We've also been looking to start drafting the micro-insurance bill, and that will commence because now the policy statement has since been issued, but at the time, at year end, the policy statement had not been issued, but currently we will now be starting to draft the micro insurance bill. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you, Nonku. Still on the same slide, the second part of it, it's deals with the concept of treating customers fairly. And on this one, before I ask Jonathan Dixon to talk about it, it is as if it was some kind of divine providence that about 2 years ago the FSB embarked on this concept of wanting to introduce it in South Africa to treat customers fairly. And we took it vigorously. We conducted research all over the world, but mainly in the UK, because we were passionate that customers have become even more important than ever before. Now, when we embarked this, we were not even aware that down the road, government will start thinking the Twin Peaks model, where the FSB, in terms of that model, will be the regulator for market conduct, because TCF is about really how the players in the market conduct themselves when dealing with the customers. So this has been a blessing to us, because now when we're working on the Twin Peaks model, this TCF story has become very, very handy, and I would ask Jonathan to share with the members how far we are with this treating customers fairly, and in short, link it with the Twin Peaks model. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. As the Executive Officer has mentioned, treating customers fairly is an outcomes-focused approach to regulation of the way that financial services firms conduct their business. And it's designed to ensure that firms put the fair treatment of customers at the heart of the way they do business, all the way from the initial product development stage through to the marketing and selling of products and finally through to after-sales service as well. And this regulatory framework is also going to be supported by more proactive supervision and also visible enforcement. And in essence, you could say that the Treating Customers Fairly framework is then going to become the blueprint for the FSB's mandate under a Twin Peaks model. So progress to date is during the period under review, a dedicated head was appointed to head up the TCF business unit within the FSB, and an internal FSB task team has been reconstituted and strengthened. A TCF roadmap was published in March 2011, which explained the principles and processes of TCF and the implementation plan, setting out the timeline of 3 years for the delivery of the TCF framework. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, as I had indicated, members would see that in the slides, we have indicated that these sections are covered in the pages as mentioned there. If they are thin on detail, it is because we take it that because we have, in the interest of time. So I also would just request the chief executive and whoever is presenting, to move with speed so that we can then get into. Yeah, thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. We move on to the next slide, slide number 5. And the slide deals with some regulatory issues there. We start off with the position with regard to market conduct. And this is market conduct in the narrow sense of the financial advisors and intermediary services as it stands now. It's in terms of that act, not as yet in terms of the Twin Peaks model. And that is the position that exists currently at the FSB. A number of licenses were issued during the period under review, and the details are in the pages between 28 and 40, but I will highlight some of those numbers because I want to comment on the numbers. During that period, the total number of FSPs licensed, including the previous FSPs who were licensed, in other words, the total is at 11,934. In other words, we have 11,934 FSPs licensed as up to 31st March 2011. Then we have another number of licenses suspended. The licenses suspended during this financial year were 2,069 suspended. But we also withdrew licenses, and we withdrew 1,604 total withdrawal. And in the process of withdrawing licenses and suspending, because they are individuals who must be looked at as well, and we have looked at 523 individuals who we debarred. In other words, these people are not allowed to operate in this space anymore because of the actions or criminal or failure to comply actions that they did not achieve. Then we also have, during the period, we had 409 visits to the various FSPs to try and assess compliance and where there's possible money laundering. 409 visits for the period under review. We have also received complaints from FSPs, 905 complaints, and of them we have resolved all of them except 411 were not resolved as of 31st March 2011, but of course we are in a different space, which we will report on the 411 in the next annual report. Then comes the contentious issue of regulatory exams, but contentious in as far as certain people are concerned, but as far as FSB and regulatory requirements, there's nothing contentious about it, except the fact that for the first time we introduced the issue of FSPs and brokers having to write examinations to make sure that the service that they provide to the people of the country is quality service. The exams have started. We've had our challenges. Amongst them, two main challenges were, one, we were challenged that we made the examinations available in one language, English, and we were challenged by a group of unhappy people saying, why is it not provided in Afrikaans? And that was the only group of people who came up on the language issue. And that challenge has even come in the form of litigation, and the matter is before the Equality Court. We have responded to all the allegations. We are waiting for the trial date, and we will go and see how we deal with the matter in that court. And in the papers, there were some allegations that there are many people who want to write exams in Afrikaans, and we are not looking after them. And we conducted a mini survey. We actually said, everyone who wants to write exams in Afrikaans, please tell us so that we know the number and we are able to plan for that request. We were given numbers by the very group saying there are over 300,000 people wanting to do it in the industry. So, but the outcomes of that survey has only said to us only 2% of the financial services providers actually want to write exams in Afrikaans. Only 2%. When we were initially told it's over 60%. But we will deal with that in court. The second challenge that we have received is the challenge from the those who've been around long enough will remember a company called Holmes Trust before it became Metropolitan. In there you had what I call the Home Trust Motorbike Brigade. People were moving in the townships, brokers moving in the townships, collecting 50 cents for funeral policies and all. Those people, some of them are still there, and they say the education level that we have is not to the level that we are able to write all these complicated exams, and yet you're saying everyone must write exams. So we are now in the process of identifying questions that are relevant to that sector of the industry so that we tailor the questions for the sector, because the intention here is not to have people losing their jobs or their businesses. We want to keep everybody there, but at the same time, we want to protect the consumers. So we are working on an arrangement that will take care of this, and the industry and those people are involved in the process, and I think we will get positive outcomes out of that. That is in as far as regulatory exams are concerned, and we will take questions when the time comes. And now I want to ask Jonathan on the same slide to deal with insurance issues, pages 48 to 67 of the annual report.
Thank you. I think the one thing to note is that the number of insurance entities in the industry has remained broadly stable under the period under review, and the financial soundness of the sector remains healthy. In terms of our supervisory activities, we conducted 17 full on-site visits to insurers during the year, mostly fine, but they did reveal some areas of concern. Those included some weaknesses in governance systems, particularly among some of the smaller insurers, poor oversight over outsourcing arrangements, some undue reliance on individuals in companies, i.e. key person risk, and some IT systems challenges as well. And all of these shortcomings are being focused on for our ongoing supervision. One of the big things to mention in the insurance sector is our Solvency Assessment and Management, or SAM, regime, which is based on the principles of Solvency II, which is being introduced in Europe, which is the Conference version of Basel II. And the proposed implementation date of SAM is January 2014, but the plan is to introduce certain interim requirements as soon as next year. The project, as reported, the project is progressing well. It's got a steering committee, 3 subcommittees, 13 task groups, and 54 work groups, all of which are meeting regularly and progressing well with their work. Again, a SAM roadmap document was published in November 2010, which outlines the implementation plan up to 2014. In addition to that, we've continued work on issues like group schemes and market structure issues, including cell captives, binder regulations, profit sharing, and cross-shareholding. And all of these outcomes will have particular impact on consumer credit insurance, which is going to be a focus area going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm now going to ask Mr. Jagenboy to give a report on the situation within the retirement fund industries.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, in the pension fund or retirement fund space, unfortunately, no major failures during the year that would have necessitated the registrar to use the ultimate enforcement power of curatorship. However, from a supervisory perspective, we found increased incidences of administrators failing to comply with our prescribed liquidity requirements. All of these cases were referred to our enforcement committee, and this committee has imposed penalties during the year under review of approximately $300,000 on these administrators. We also found instances where funds failed to constitute boards in compliance with fund rules, and in these cases, the registrar exercises powers in terms of the Act and by appointing boards of trustees to regularize the situations. An important support to our pensions department is the actuarial department, and they deal primarily with transfers between funds, so-called Section 14 transfers, actuarial valuation reports, and surplus apportionment schemes. This department approved 4,448 Section 14 transfers amounting to approximately 24.3 billion rand during the year under review. And they also closely monitor the financial soundness of funds through the analysis of statutory reports and ensured consistency between surplus valuations and post-surplus valuations. During the year, 1,050 post-surplus actuarial valuations were assessed and accepted by the actuarial department. The surplus legislation was promulgated, as everybody would know, in 7th of December 2001. As at year-end, the majority of funds, except for bargaining council funds, which were brought into the, which were subject, brought under the Pension Fund Act in 2008, have already complied with the legislation. We have a major challenge in ensuring the remaining funds comply and are focusing our efforts on getting them to submit their schemes. During the reporting year, 125 surplus apportionment schemes were submitted, bringing the total accumulated submissions as of 31st March to 1,691. As of 31st March 2011, 19.3 billion rand had been approved by the FSB as apportionment surpluses. The industry also submitted 961 nil surplus schemes during the year, bringing the total number of nil surplus schemes considered by the FSB to 20,225 as of 31 March. Finally, an important initiative of ours during the year was the design of an electronic trustee training toolkit. The toolkit went live and was officially launched at the IRF conference in September 2011. This training facility, which is totally free for any interested trustee, has been extremely well received by the industry to date. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacob. We're moving to slide number 6, Chair. And that covers pages 82 all the way to number 100. It's all about the capital markets, collective investment schemes, and market abuse. Starting with the capital market area. Chair, you'll recall that not long ago, the whole world was reeling under what we call the financial crisis. And as a result of the financial crisis, the ministers of finance worldwide came together and say, what is it that needs to be done? And that, I'm talking about the G20 arrangement. And from the G20, okay. Yeah. So we have the G20, some institutions there. We have the G20, we have the International Organization of Securities Commissions. We also have a new FSB, Financial Stability Board. All these bodies are dealing with the after effects of the financial crisis that the world experienced. But of course, in the, all those meetings of the various institutions, there are outcomes. There are recommendations that come out of those meetings. And as a result of all the recommendations up to date that have come out of those meetings, South Africa has also taken note of those and looked at its own legislative framework and how we're doing things and see how is it or what is it that we can do to improve our situation so that should a recurrence of the issues that led to the crisis happen again, what is it that we will do and what is it that we must do now to minimize the impact of the crisis if it happens again. But of course it will happen, we know that. That has led to the number of bills that the head of legal has spoken earlier about. We have now taken note of the fact that there is a need to revise our Security Services Act to capture all the recommendations that have come out of G20, IOSCO, and the FSB. And the issues are kept that in the bills. I guess the bills will be brought to this committee when time permits, and those issues will be dealt with then. We also decided that it is important to also to start regulating the credit rating agencies. And these are institutions that tell the world how the financial, they try to measure the financial strength and unregulated. Now we are moving into a space where we're saying we need to regulate this agency so that they're not just saying whatever they want to say to the detriment of the financial sector. So there's a bill that will come through to try and regulate this. Under the collective investment schemes as well, there's going to be some amendments to take into account the recommendations, as I said, that come out of these bodies. Just before I move away from the capital markets slide, I think it is important at this time to mention to the members of the committee that once more our stock exchange, the JSE, has been rated the best regulated stock exchange in the world for the second year running, ahead of UK and the USA. So we're very proud of what is happening between us and the JSE, the regulatory space. It is not a small thing to have your exchange being the best in the world. It takes a lot of effort, and I want to thank the management, FSB, and the management of the JSE, and they are currently hosting the World Federation of Exchanges as I'm talking to you now. Under collective investment schemes, this is one of the well-behaved industry. in as far as regulation is concerned. And you will see by the inflow of investment that flowing to that space. I mean, in the year under review, the assets have grown from 817 billion to 962 billion rand, which means it's an inflow of over 100 billion rand, which is very remarkable. And the players in this industry, I wish all players in the various industries would be as jealous with their industry as this industry. They self-regulate, they self-monitor. The regulator is part of them, and any player who misbehaves there gets reprimanded by fellow regulators, fellow players in the industry. And this is why I say this is one of the industry that is really, really well behaved. Moving on to the market conduct, market abuse, sorry, pages 99 to 100. There it's where we look at the players manipulating the markets by way of price manipulation, false information, insider trading. We dealt with 18 cases during the period under review. We investigated the 18, and 14 of them were dealt with and closed. And thanks to the internal prosecution called enforcement in the FSB, we've been able to deal with these cases. Of course, the outcomes are very often parties request settlements. And in most cases, yes, we did settle, but there are one or two where we did not settle, and one of the matters has gone to the High Court for review, and we will go there and defend the position that we have taken. Now, when it comes to the settlement, the real problem there is parties. When parties settle, we have legislation, and that legislation runs across the institution at the FSB. It says every settlement must be published. The problem we're having is parties come, settle, and say, regulator, we're settling, please don't publish whatever the outcomes for our own reputation. Of course, we don't have a discretion not to publish. Legislation says we must publish. So indeed, we do publish. However, it's the contents of the publication that sometimes becomes an issue, but we have strictly complied with legislation, and we have published whatever settlement details that we entered into with the defaulting parties. Thank you. If we move on to slide number 7, we deal with issues of enforcement, internal enforcement, appeal boards, curatorships, litigation. Our head of legal is going to take us through that because she's well positioned to enlighten the House on litigation matters. Thank you. Nongu.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the honorable members of the committee. If I must start with the inspections area, it is one of the registrar's tools of regulation and supervision that in certain cases where it becomes necessary, that the registrar instructs for an inspection to take place. There's a dedicated department within the FSB, the Inspectorate Department, which had a residue of 24 ongoing inspections from the previous period. And then the registrar then requested, during the period under review, requested 19 inspections. That brought a total of 43 inspections that were on course. And of that 43, 27 inspections were completed during the period. Honorable members might also just note that these are the inspections that enable the registrar to take the necessary decisions whenever there is a need to do so, including the applications for curatorships where it becomes necessary. Moving on to the Enforcement Committee, this is a committee that was established on the 1st of November 2008. It is an administrative tribunal within the FSB, and it has a jurisdiction to impose penalties, compensation orders, and cost orders against people who contravene any of the laws of the FSB. It considered 6 cases during the period under review. 3 respondents had contravened anti-market abuse provisions. Those received fines of 2 million, 1 million, and 16,000, respectively. 2 respondents had acted as administrators to pension funds without authorizations, and they received fines of 30,000 plus and 150,000 plus. A 50,000 penalty was also imposed on a funeral parlor which engaged funeral business in engaged in unregistered insurance business. Moving on to curatorships, Chairperson, the FSB oversees curatorships as they continue. And during the period under review, it had 16 curatorships that it was overseeing. Just to mention a few that were quite significant, we'll talk of the corporate money managers curatorship, the New Era Life, Ovation, the Fidentia one, and the Gavala's related pension funds, which include the KEDAC pension funds. Under the Gavala's related pension funds, we would mention the Coltec, the Michel Kors, the Peak Bell, Lucas, Sable, and PowerPack curatorships. Moving on to civil claims against the FSB, there are certain instances where we receive civil claims, either jointly with other parties or on our own. Currently, we've got 1 civil claim that was instituted against the FSB and 18 other defendants by the Joint Municipal Pension Fund for an amount of 1.9 billion rand. The trial date was set for July, but it has since been postponed, and preparations for trial, which by all indications currently looks like it will be next year, during the fourth quarter of next year, preparations are on course by not only the FSB, but also by, you know, the rest of the other defendants. We also litigate in the FSB appeal board space, which ensures that the decisions of the registrars are subjected to review by an independent panel of persons appointed as a tribunal, which we refer to as the FSB appeal board. 32 matters were finalized during the period under review, and these are all matters that enjoy a what you'd call a rehearing, so to speak, a reconsideration of the decision of the registrar to establish, you know, the correctness, and the judgments are provided to us by the appeal board chairpersons, which are all qualified lawyers, judges, advocates, or attorneys of like 10 years experience or more. Thank you, Chairperson. That concludes this area.
Thank you, Nonku. Still on slide number 7, we're now going to have a presentation on consumer education, and it's covered under pages 38 to 46 of the annual report, and that's going to be presented by Ms. Olivia Davis.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members of the Committee. The Financial Services Board, in connection with financial education in the schools, continues to work with the new Department of Basic and Higher Education to facilitate the inclusion of financial education in the school curricula. And looking further at teacher development, the Managing Your Money project was repeated last year by the FSB in partnership with the South African Insurance Association, or SAIA. And this project, just to revise again, aims to provide grades 10, 11, and 12 teachers of mathematical literacy with readily usable resources in financial education for the classroom, such as lesson plans and posters. So in addition to developing the resources, we also held 90 workshops with over 4,000 teachers last year. And when we look at the 4-year period from 2006 to 2010, workshops were attended by over 9,000 mathematical literacy teachers. All in all, the teachers were most impressed with the lesson materials, and they also were very interested in the demonstration lessons that were part of the workshops. We are busy in the process handing over this project to the Department of Basic Education so that they may continue with revising the materials to fit in line with the new curriculum, and also to then maybe continue with this particular work with the teachers. Between January and March 2011, 159 workshops were held with further education and training students, about 4,800 of them in 49 FET colleges. Evaluation showed some increases in learners' knowledge of a number of items, including financial regulators, the understanding of paycheck deductions and why the salaries seem to shrink when they've been promised a certain salary, financial products, and so on. 98% of them reported that they found the workshops informative. This project will be repeated again in March 2012. The FSB uses exhibitions and career fairs to create an awareness of the importance of personal financial management. And during the past year, the FSB participated in 7 such exhibitions targeted at school students as well as university students. In terms of community education, we participated in 34 workshops in response to invitations from various organizations or government departments. In addition, we conducted 200 5-hour workshops for over 4,000 consumers across the country, and these are usually consumers in the lower LSM groupings 1 to 5, such as the farm workers or municipal workers and so on. We also facilitated a radio interview program with the SABC, in which 150 radio interviews with FSB staff, other regulators and ombudsmen were conducted in the official languages. Also worked with Radio Riverside on a special project for the Northern Cape because they are so sparsely populated, and radio is a very helpful means of conveying important information in that province. We were also able to secure additional interviews with other radio stations at no cost. We have continued with the commuter education project in partnership with the SAHIA for the 6th time this year, or the past year, and the commuters enjoy most the interactive parts of this project. They enjoy that more than watching the television broadcasts or listening to the tapes and so on. They enjoy being able to speak to somebody about financial issues. Just a further note, honorable members and chairperson, the last year when we came on November 17th, we members of the committee recommended that we also work with the South African Council of Churches and also the Contralesa organization so that we can extend our reach in terms of financial education. I'm happy to say, Chair and Honorable Members, we have, with our executive officer leading us, had a meeting with the executive of the South African Council of Churches, and we have prepared a proposal with them jointly to organize workshops both for their facilitators in their regions as a pilot project in Gauteng to start, and then to have the facilitators do consumer education programs or workshops with members of congregations throughout Gauteng. So we're going to measure this pilot very well so that we can then work with them to prepare for a rollout across the country to all the congregations. We are busy arranging for meetings with Contralesa, and we hope to achieve a similar result with them as well. Looking at international activities, the FSB has worked very closely with the OECD and on financial literacy and education issues. And we are members of different boards and committees and have participated very actively in terms of presenting papers and of giving input into recommendations for good practice. The FSB also participated in a rather significant research project this past year and with the OECD and other countries to look at how we can measure the success of financial education internationally and be able to compare the results effectively. Just one last word on the international activities. The FSB will be hosting, together with the OECD, a conference on international on financial literacy here in October on the 27th and the 28th. So in next year's annual report, we will be able to give more details on this particular event. Other items that we will be able to report on in next year's annual report would be the KwaZulu-Natal School's public speaking program. And the reason I mention this is because all the topics of the learners are based on financial education or regulation, and talks are in process to actually turn this into a national program. So discussions are going on with the Department of Education. We also want to be able to report next year on the, a national consumer financial education strategy. And this, Chair and Honourable Members, will also assume a very significant place within the Twin Peaks arrangement of the regulatory framework for South Africa. And we are working under the guidance of the National Treasury in this matter. To enable the development of this particular strategy, we will also be able to report on the results of a major national baseline study on financial literacy in South Africa, which will tell us about consumers' knowledge, behaviors, and skills in finance. And this will assist in planning our targeted consumer education program. We will also be able to report on our work with the National Treasury on the microinsurance pilot project for education, which we also hope to roll out next year. And that's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivia. We're now moving on to slide number 8. And this slide from now on is about the operations of the FSB, the financial matters and all that. And as the minister, Deputy Minister said earlier, FSB celebrated 20 years of existence in April this year. And of those 20 years, we did not only celebrate 20 years as 20 years, but we've also celebrated the fact that we've had 20 unqualified financial statements as well. Thank you. But I'm going to ask our CFO, Daud Sidat, to take us through slide number 8. Daud.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, honorable members. I'm going to discuss the FSB's staffing, which appears on page 11 to 13 of the annual report. Our staff complement, including contract staff, as of 31st March was 449. That's up 7% from 418 the previous year. And this is against budgeted post of 479 employees. We had a 10% staff turnover factor for this period. Our overall staff complement is 78% previously disadvantaged individuals, and our gender split is 53% female and 47% male. Our employment equity targets, as committed, are for 84% previously disadvantaged individuals and a male-to-female split of 50%. Whilst we've made significant progress on achieving these targets, we are mindful of the mix and gender representation on the executive management level and employment of people with disabilities. Chair, as part of our commitment to skills development, we awarded 3 bursaries to full-time students in actuarial science, and we engaged 4 interns for the last period, for a period of 12 months, 2 of which have become full-time employees of the organization already. in as far as our ICE information communication systems discussion, which appears on page 14 and 15 of our annual report, as part of our strive to update and upgrade to the latest information technology systems, we began during this last period a major revamp of our ICT infrastructure. We spent 14 million rand during this period on the upgrade, and by year end, our assessments and initial designs were completed and preparations for testing the new systems began. Chair, I can inform the committee that whilst we will report on it in next year's annual report, as we sit here today, the upgraded infrastructure is currently underway and we expect a complete handover to us by early November. As part of our compliance with ICT governance and the ever-importance of technology in our environment, we've added the position of Chief Information Officer to the Executive Committee of the Board, and we are pleased to announce and introduce our new CIO, Sifiwa, and hopefully from my point of view, she will take over this presentation next year. In as far as our stakeholder interaction and branding, which appears on page 19 to 21, Chair, for the last period, we received 48,908 public queries, of which 9,600 queries were received via emails, letters and faxes, and walking clients to the FSB. 39,200 of these queries were received via calls through our call center. This is over and above the various media queries and interviews that we are constantly address. The board of the FSB has identified that the FSB needs to improve its branding and has decided to adopt a new strategy in changing its interaction with the public and has since employed a communication and branding specialist. The impact of this new strategy will be reported on in the next annual report. Chair, then, in the annual report on pages 153 to 168, is a quite detailed discussion on our performance measures against our strategic objectives. I hope the members have read it, and we expect to receive some questions during question times on this. Chairman, I can quickly take you to the financial performance, which appears on page 112 to 175. And whilst I don't want to go into too much details, all I'd like to highlight to you is that we had an audited surplus of 15,049,000 for the last year against a budgeted deficit of 18,600,000. And that's compared to a deficit of in 2010 of 14.6 million. Chair, one of the items that I normally present on every year is the explanation of the executive management remuneration, and that's on the current slide. There was a 14% increase in the actual cost, but a minus 6% expenditure versus the budgeted expenditure. The reason being, well, the factor for the increase is there was an 8% increase for executive member salary. The reason for the under expenditure on the budget is that there was a new executive member post that was not filled during the current year, while the process was still underway at year end, and the factor between the 8 and the 14% is as a result of one of the executive members being changing his job from a deputy executive to the chief operating officer. Madam Chair, we received a request to bring an update on our financial performance, and I've brought the slide that explains the FSB's financial performance up to the end of 31st August 2011. In terms of our year-to-date figures, we've got a net surplus of 53.3 million against a budgeted surplus of 49.7 million. However, in terms of our forecast for the year, our budget for the year is to have a deficit of 16.3 million, and we're forecasting to have a deficit of 15.28 million. I'm in your hands, Madam Chair, whether you'd like me to go into details or would you rather I take questions when they're ready?
the report that we received in good time, I would suggest that you go into detail.
Okay. Madam Chair, in terms of our gross income, which is our levies, we've invoiced out 175 million versus a budget of 164 million. We're expecting to meet our budgeted levy target of 359 million. Madam Chair, in terms of our fees, we don't see much difference. In terms of our other income, you would notice we have collected 9.6 million against a budget of just 2.7 million, and we're forecasting to collect 9.7 million against 5.3 million. The main reason for that is during this year in April, we hosted a major conference, a DIOSCO conference. Whilst we budgeted to account for it in the previous year, new accounting standards these days has compelled us to account for it in the current year. So it appeared in our last year's budget, but we are forced now to show this money has been received in the current year. So that's the reason why we are showing that we're collecting more than we expected. And as far as our expenditure is concerned, Madam Chair, we're expecting a saving of just under 1% by year end for this current year. And that's mainly as a result of staff movements and appointments. And as far as our general expenditure is concerned, we're showing that we're forecasting to have a 5%, a 6% over expenditure, and that's directly linked to the previous explanation of the IOSCO conference. Whilst we budgeted for the expenditure last year, the new accounting standards compelled us to report it in this current year. Madam Chair, I don't think there's anything else that I can explain other than overall we're expecting to meet our budgeted target.
Chair, as you would have noticed that no matter how hard I try to get people to be brief, but because of the passion with the work they do, and in order also to justify the travel to Cape Town, and also the temptation, Chairperson, also look beyond the year under review, which also I tried very hard, even in our preparations, to say the year under review ends on the 31st of March. But you would find the temptation to want to begin to look forward, which is not a crime, Chairperson, but at times it lends us into the terrain that we actually are not intending. But also I see the committee also, as you correctly pointed out, requested also that we report on the current year part of it. And I must say, due to the short time also given to them, I think the staff did everything in their power to comply, even though it was under tremendous time constraints. But thank you, Chair. That's the annual report of the FSB. The officials are here to take questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Deputy Minister. I was still waiting to hear the two voices that have not justified their.
Chair, you must just look in the report what it is that pertains them, and you'll get them to speak.
Okay. Honourable members, questions, clarity, comments, Dr. George, Swan Royen, Madlamin, and Madam. In that order, honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy Minister, and thank you, FSB, for your report. On page number 16 of the annual financial report, there's detail on the inspectorate strategy. What I would like to know is how the FSB identifies its inspection targets. And then, do you outsource any of your inspections? And then on page number 22,
there is detail on curatorships. Now, we all know, that there is currently a great deal of concern around the existing curatorship model. It seems to make curators extremely rich, while doubt exists about how much money actually reaches members from whom it was stolen. You mentioned that settlements were made with Sanlam and Alexander Forbes. Did they do this to avoid legal action? And why wasn't legal action taken by the FSB instead? Then I'd also like to know that when the FSB levies fines that are obviously paid, where does this money go? Where is it held and how is it applied? Then on page 146, under, let's just get there, there's detail on key management remuneration, specifically salaries and incentive bonuses. But I can't seem to find any detail on the remuneration policy on which this is based. So I'd like to know if you do have a policy and then on what basis were these incentive bonuses paid. And then finally, there is no detail on reports by curators to the Financial Services Board. So what I'd like to know is, are these reports being received in compliance with the appropriate rules and regulations? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Once more, let me take this opportunity to commend the FSB. We did that while we were in your offices, but I think the report, to a large extent, confirms that there is a lot of good work that is taking place in the FSB, and really, as part of our agenda of ensuring that South Africa is one of the best in terms of financial systems, I think we really need to commend you for the good work that you are continuing to do. And of course, I know the Chair has been very clear on this one, that you must always count on our support. Chair, on this issue of the one raised by Honorable George, curatorship, you know, the recent road accident fund debacle, that is our so-called angelic legal practitioners, have proven not to be that angelic. And as a result, their status has been ended. And I think one of the concerns, of course, complementing what the question posed by Honorable George, is that curators tend to drag some of these processes deliberately so as they can milk the process. And so far, through our engagement with FSB, I'm not of the impression that there are thorough, adequate checks and balances, I mean, to ensure that this doesn't happen. Because it seems if it's at their discretion as to how, I mean, these matters are prolonged. Because there will always be technical reasons provided for some of these cases to be dragging. And, you know, as a layperson, it's always difficult, I mean, to refute some of the technical reasons provided. But I'm just saying there is this concern. I wonder if there's any improvement before maybe we investigation or the orgs do their work. Is there any maybe attempt on the side of the FSB to ensure that they don't fall into the very same trap? But also, you see, you're excited that I wonder if it's possible for the FSB to have clear targets as to what is it that I expected to generate out of these curatorship processes. Or maybe is there any indication of how much is expected to be realized out of this particular, within a specific time frame? I'm not sure if that is possible because there are always technicalities around some of these processes. And my second question, Chair, where is it? Because I'm using the My My second question is on legislative development. You know, developments that are currently taking place, if really we develop legislation to respond to them, I will argue that we seem to be a victim of legislative lag, because some of the things that we want to respond to keep on changing, and they change rapidly and instantaneous, you know. Now, as a result, I think some of the things that we want to address, time is of essence. And I don't have that sense that we are moving expeditiously in terms of processing some of this legislation. I think if we are intending to deal with, let's say for an example, the financial markets bill, things are happening now. I mean, the financial systems are collapsing as we are speaking. We might have to introduce other amendments, and ultimately we might be in that process, a vicious process of not approving this or maybe in acting this space, you know. So I'm a bit worried that we seem to be moving very slow in terms of a process, or maybe it's because we are still in the comfort zone. But the rest of the matter is this, is that things are changing very rapidly outside here, and we are part of this global, I mean, development. But now also, you know, I'm very interested, more especially on the credit rating bill, on the enforcement aspect of it. Because to me, really, developing some of this legislation without paying attention to how we're going to enforce it is just like not developing it, you know. So I just want to know, I mean, because this is an international phenomenon, how are we envisaging effective enforcement of this particular regulation? Because obviously our focus here is developing something that is going to suit domestic conditions. But the rest of the matter is an international phenomenon. So how are we going to deal with it going forward? Yeah, I think those are the issues. If there's anything, I'll come back. Thank you.
Okay. And Susnongo, don't worry. To us, you are still an angel. Mahlamin.
Thank you, Chair. First, Chair, I would like to follow on the on what Comrade Van Rooyen has actually said, to commend the FSB for the hard work, and to take us seriously. Whatever recommendations that we do make, they are being considered, and keeping then our government being perceived effective and efficient. So, for that hard work, I really thank you. However, though, I've got quite a number of questions for you. Following to what the other members have said, as far as the curator and the liquidation processes are concerned, you have also indicated that 950 million has been recovered. How much is outstanding? And going down to page 22, that loss of 1.9 billion. Due to the injudicious investments in agriculture. I know that I can see that you are saying that the case has been postponed. But however, what are you expecting? Are you comfortable with the case? Do you think you can scoop anything? If I can get some report back on that. And then going to page 70. I don't know now. Our task is the oversight, and when you do the oversight, you do the oversight on the very relevant and the live information or data. Now, if a data that is now not in question or on the review year, now I don't know what to do, but I would like to understand, because the data that is there on page 71 regarding financial statements, it's for 2009. So whatever the decision or discussions that we are arguing about, they are for 2009. And you even actually said that the statistic, unfortunately, it is for the year ending the 31st December 2009, to endorse to what I'm saying. That is the first question. But secondly, on the very same statistics that you have put on page 71, it shows that smaller funds with the assets below 20 million do not submit the financial statements. Is it because of the administrative costs? Is it because of other reasons? If there are reasons, yes, let us know them. If it's about the administrative costs, let us understand why. And how many of these funds that have failed to submit their financial statement, how many are they? Now, if I go to page 153, if we look at page 153, trying to do the comparison between the stress plans and the performance thereof, you realize that much as we are saying as FSB we have tried our best, but when it comes to the retirement funds as a division, it is not that good. And I'm sure one needs to get a clarity as to why the bed is not taking off. Where is the oil and the legs of the plan? The plan towards the regulatory and the supervisory. Why is it not up? So that, because I mean that's our job. That's where we base our oversight. I understand that it says in this report it has to be approved. Approved by who? Who is this person who doesn't want to approve it? If it's there. Coming down still I'm expecting at least some time frames as to when is it expected then to be known. Honourable Chair, coming to the financials which were presented to us, you know, like what Honourable Van Rene said, you know, people that didn't do some chartered accounting or accounting studies, they always go even for things that sometimes are obvious to the people that have got that experience or that knowledge. So if that is the case, then you shall excuse me. You know, the expenditure, Honourable Chair, something like 218 million, which is allocated to other staff expenses. What is that? Are those the fringe benefits? Are those the S&Ts? Are those what is this? What is this, so much money? Is it, what is it allocated for? We need to understand it. And Honourable Chair, the last one, still on the financial performance, like what the Honourable Deputy Minister said, that you tend to be so excited to even give the information that you're not supposed to give and which we are supposed to be asked next year. But now that you have done it, we have to ask. Yeah, you see, operating deficit or surplus, there is that 21 million. Is that a liability or a loss? Budgeted 26, but actually sitting on 21. Well, what is the billing coming down there on that FIS umbat of 9.2 and 12.12? What is that? Is that a liability or a loss? I need a clarity on that. Thank you, Chair. Honourable Adam.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to congratulate the FSB on the education drive. Education is very, very pertinent to me, especially the community education that they intend to do. Or what they have done. My first question is, if advisory is available for the children or the staff of the FSB? And then the second one on commuter education, I see they have six commuter education projects since 2004, but they've done it only in eight provinces. Why not in the Northern Cape? I'm from the Northern Cape, that's why I'm asking. And why only in more pertinent places like Polokwane, Bloemfontein, Port Elizabeth and Cape Town? What about the rural people? Shouldn't you use the electronic media to reach out people? Because financial education is pertinent these days. And that's part of our poverty problem in this country. We are not financially educated. And I'm not talking of BCom degrees and the basics, the very, very basics, how to budget. And then on page 55, on the unregistered insurance business, we have been talking about this funeral insurance business forever when the FSB is here. Now, I see you have listed some companies that were not underwritten by registered long-term insurers. And you've done it in newspapers such as the Daily Sun, Sowetan, and Sowetan. Full stop. What about the rest of the country? Then, Jefferson? On market abuse, the GMA, the Directorate of Market Abuse, is responsible for combating market abuse. And it is done in terms of the SSA, the Security Service Act. Now, I would like to know on page 100 on distributions, you say that the SSA, in terms of the SSA, the GMA may distribute penalties to persons prejudiced. May. What happens to the penalties that are not distributed? And then the very last one, on your corporate governance, you have an audit and risk management committee, very crucial in your work. Now, if I look to the members of the committee, the attendance, non-attendance, then I see your chairperson, Mr. Hawksworth, have resigned already on the 2nd of September 2010, and there was no replacement for him till the 23rd of March 2011. What is your stance on resignations, as he is a crucial person? And the second person there, Mr. Kube, is also... Kube. He has also resigned. So only three of the five members are still in the committee. So what is your stance on things like that? Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. And over to you, DM, and your team.
I'm going to allow the chief executive to allocate the questions to the people responsible. But perhaps to immediately address the issue of the legislation, as Honorable Van Rooyen correctly points out, that whilst we are legislating, it seems like we are more reactive than proactive. And also the delays in bringing legislation for processing and ratification. I must indicate that both the Financial Markets Bill and the Credit Ratings Bill have gone through Cabinet. The only process that is now being undertaken is that of public consultation, as you would know our democracy requires. But also we have been trying to find space in the parliamentary program to bring it to Parliament. So it is ready for, to come to Parliament as soon as the parliamentary program permits. But also I must indicate that, the other question that he raised was the question with regards to the credit ratings bill and its enforcement. It is indeed a very difficult one. But at the end of the day, and the ones that we seek to regulate will only be our local ones, because we cannot regulate the international credit rating agencies. But also to make sure that the local ones also, because even the international ones rely on the information, on some of the information that come from the your local domestic credit rating agencies. Because the purpose of the legislation is to ensure that they also operate within a particular framework, instead of them. It's the same principle of making sure that there is somebody who guards the guardians as well. That's the whole purpose. But it is indeed, I agree, Honorable Van Ryan, it's a very difficult environment. I remember at some point when I was traveling, I got news that South Africa has been downgraded by a Chinese credit rating agency called Dagong, and unfortunately I was there, I wanted to know who they are. But they had already published their results, and they had an impact. So being a local one, if there is no legislation internally that regulates the way they do their business, they are able to do those things, and the impact of what they do has far-reaching implications. So we would want to guard against a situation where our own are able to do that also and create unnecessary turbulence in the industry. But it is just an attempt. But as you would also know, and as the chief executive at some point pointed out, that the reason why we, with legislation, we remain behind the curve is that people use existing legislation in order to be able to commit some of the things they commit in the markets. And therefore, it is very difficult to be proactive, because you might legislate where there actually is no danger of any failure, as government is actually, government's intention is to try and regulate market failures. The other questions are too difficult for me. I'm going to ask the chief executive to allocate them to people responsible. And if there's anything still remaining, we will see how we deal with it going forward. Thanks. And I must indicate, Chairperson.
No, I wanted to make a follow-up on your response before the chief executive
okay.
On the legislation and particular.
Okay. Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. No, Chairperson. Mr. Deputy Minister, I'm not used to sit on this side. No, I just wanted to get from your program as to how urgent are these legislations, especially the two, the Financial Markets Bill and the credit rating.
Chair, yeah, I must indicate that even though they were urgent, but they were following the normal processes, because they had gone through cabinet. I can't give the exact dates. I think sometime in June, and after that it was the public consultation period, and then. And then it's going to be the parliamentary, the parliamentary one, but they already are in the pipeline. I take it that when you ask that question, Chairperson, it's because you want to assist in expediting the legislation. Yeah. No, we will be communicating with your office, Chairperson, to ensure that we get the necessary assistance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister. The allocation of the questions will be the questions with regard to the inspections and the outsourcing. I will take that. The whole issue around curatorships, the first part about curators becoming rich, the length of curatorships and the dragging of the processes, that part I will ask the head of legal department to respond to, so that I don't sound defensive. The second part, involving the question around Sanlam and Alexander Forbes, I will take it at the risk of being defensive. And the myself and the institution. And the issue on where do we keep fines and what do we use the fines for, that will be answered by the CFO. The issue around remuneration, in the absence of the chairperson of the board, I will try to answer that one. And the reports from the curators, whether they are received and why they not captured in here, I will give that to Mr. Jagan Boyd, and where needed, I will also come in. The issue of legislative development process, I think that then we go on to the Honorable Minister Matlangu mentioned the issue of 900 million being recovered and how much is still maybe out there. I will take that one. Also the 1.9 billion rand matter, I will take that as well. The issues on page 71, which relates to retirement fund issues, that I will give to Mr. Boyd. And the questions on the strategic plan and the financial statements, budget and expenditure and deficits, the CFO will take that one. Consumer education, it will be, the questions will be taken by Ms. Olivia Davis with me if I have to chip in. And the unregistered funeral policies, Jonathan, unregistered insurance business, Jonathan will take that. Market abuse, I will take that. And the Audit and Risk Committee membership from the honorable member there. CFO, myself, will take it if need be. Thank you very much. Let's kick off then with the first question of the inspections and the targets and the outsourcing, whether we outsource or not. First, what triggers in inspections is in our functions of regulating and supervising, you'll recall that institutions submit annual returns in the form of financial statements, in the form of compliance reports, and all those documents on arrival, they get analyzed. In the process of analyzing, you could be identifying issues. And once you identify issues from the, and this is from the line department, it's not from the inspectorate division, and the line department would file a request to the inspectorate division for investigations. That is how the, and once, depending on how many of this request come from the line department, targets will be set, and looking at the importance of the allegations and the infringements. Then we will set targets, which ones are going to be done by when, and also, of course, you look at the budget. But, of course, in the regulatory space, budget is never an issue because work has to be, if work has to be done, that work will be done. The issue of outsourcing. The function of supervising, regulating rests with the FSB. Therefore, the function of investigating can never be outsourced. It is a function that is in the regulatory space and it remains there. Having said that, from time to time, we may need to call in some expertise because of the nature of what we're trying to investigate and the time frames that are at stake. So the outsourcing doesn't happen, but we do insource expertise from time to time where necessary. The curatorships. Curators becoming rich and all those, I leave it to Nonku.
Thank you, Chairperson. The FSB has been in the space of dealing with certain questions with respect to curatorships, and the matter of the remuneration of curatorships is actually covered in the Act. Just to, as a start, in the Inspections Act, the way that the Act covers the remuneration of curators, it actually it encompasses the court as well. so that the question of the remuneration of a curator is something that the FSB, you know, recommends to the court. It's a recommendation that the FSB would make to a court at a stage when the curatorship is being applied for. Inasmuch as the curator himself or herself is recommended by the FSB with an attachment of a CV, and that is a matter for the court to approve. That's the first thing, just to lay the background. The FSB, having realized the whole question of how long curatorships take, and the question of how long curatorships take is a function of how much work that particular curator must do with respect to the question of investigating, litigating, and bringing about all sorts of action that needs to be taken for the purpose of recovering the funds of a particular fund that have either been misappropriated or somehow been laid astray. In other words, the curator is charged with the function of ensuring that those funds come back to the fund for the purpose of distribution to the members that to whom they belong. The curators also need, in many instances, they need to deal with the books, because we find that in a lot of instances the books are in a very bad state, so that you find you need the curators that would have accounting skills, that must do forensic investigation and establish exactly how the monies flowed, where the monies flowed and how and where, and whose monies flowed where. For instance, an investment from X, when it was received and how it was received and what happened to that investment. Now, that is an exercise that the curators always have to do, to first of all go through the books and see if they can make sense of the funds that are supposed to be reflected in the books. All these things take time. Therefore, the FSB then got to a point where it had to come to some kind of arrangement which says each curator cannot make more than a certain amount in a month, in a given month. And just to come back to the computation of the fees that the curators make, the fees are computed on the basis of the various professions that the FSB taps from when it's looking for curators. And those professions are the legal profession and the accounting and auditing professions. The reason for that is because of the nature of the work that needs to be done. And that work, as I've said before, is legal in nature, it is accounting in nature. Now, those curators are paid in terms of the various tariffs of the professions in which they operate. Obviously, the FSB then decided that because the pay, the remuneration, is on an hourly basis, the FSB had to come to a point where it decides that in any given month, any curator that there must be a cap on the amount of remuneration that any curator can make, and that cap was set at 300,000 per month. There is a formula that is used for purposes of calculating that, and that is only a cap. It's not to say that any curator is expected or must make that amount, but we had to get to a point where we say, assuming that particular curator does nothing else and does only the curatorship work, then, you know, on a weekly basis, the expectation is that curator would spend so many hours in that week. And obviously, all of that work is checked against the regular reporting which the DO retirement funds will report on. Just to talk about, again relating to curators, to talk about the distribution. I think there was a question on the distribution of the recoveries. The distribution of the recoveries is done by on the basis of what becomes available after the curator has done its work. And it is done on an equitable basis. And the equitable basis says, it looks at the investment that was made by various members of the particular fund. And those investments are then taken into account in proposing the distributions. And the distributions in the main are also sanctioned in court, because you will find that obviously in a curatorship space, there will not be enough to cover, you know, all the expected returns of the investments. So in that case, it does start to operate more like in a liquidation space, where you need to actually go and get the court to look at the equitableness, the equity that has been applied in conducting the distributions. That has been the approach of the curator so far. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of distribution, honourable members must not lose sight of the fact that we are here talking the recovery of surplus assets. And once assets are recovered, the distribution has to comply with the surplus distribution legislation, which means going back now to go and trace members. It's not like monies will be recovered today and distributed tomorrow. The surplus requirements as per in the legislation must be complied with. The question of whether these things are dragged long or not, I give you an example of a curatorship that was put in place in 2002. It is still on. It will still be on for some time to come. And we're very clear on that one, because of the nature of problems and the monies that must still be recovered and the challenges around this, recovering the monies. All these issues are before the courts. And unfortunately for the curators, FSB, we are not in the judicial space. We depend on the judiciary. We can only put cases there and wait for the trial date. They are, on this particular matter, there are 2-3 huge cases that are coming. We've only dealt with one in the past 2 weeks, where this particular fund was saved an amount of 700 million, and we had to go and fight in court with a huge institution, and I'm not mentioning names because otherwise it comes in the media. Then there's another one, another huge case coming on the same matter, facing another huge institution. And there's the third one, all of them huge institutions who have benefited from this particular matter. But they're not going to give the money back as easy as we may wish that it happens. They're going to fight, and they fight in court, and the courts take long. So much as we would want the curators to be speeded up, sometimes there are needs, requirements, and the challenges that must be faced to address the issues that are in those particular curatorships. Having said that, let me move on to the question on Sanlam and Alexander Forbes settlement matters. It has been reported that these two institutions settled because the FSB threatened them with withdrawal of their licenses. Far from the truth. Far from the truth. Settlements, there can never be a settlement induced by one party. Settlements are a result of interaction between parties. The contents of the settlement agreements are not known to any external party other than the negotiating party. So for anybody to comment on what happened there, it's really it's something that one has to ask whether people have any respect for the legal requirements. What the registrar has done, creative speculation, what the registrar has done, it's once all these settlements were done, a letter of suspended sentence was issued, in the sense that the contents of the letter says, if you as an institution, you repeat what we've gone through, if you repeat it, your license will be taken. And that is a fair suspended sentence. With regard to whether these monies were distributed, again, it's surplus. It will go through the surplus process. And we were also told that there's no litigation about these two institutions. Again, people are speculating. This thing, there can never be a settlement. If you charge anybody or any institution with fraud, theft, and all that, FSB can't prosecute. The matters must be given to the prosecuting authority. And the institutions, one of them, because of the prospect of appearing in court and having to defend this matter, which it's indefensible, went out and plea bargained. Nobody's talking about the plea bargain. They're talking about the settlement. If you look at the document on the plea bargain, parties have, you can never plea bargain if you don't admit guilt. They have admitted guilt, they got sentenced, they got fines, and they got suspended sentences. But what you hear in the streets, in the white streets of Ghana, white pages of the newspapers, it's no, parties didn't admit any guilt and so on. Unfortunately, I can't make those documents available because it's between its inter partes. But the truth of the matter is nothing was done underhand. Everything was above board by FSB, NPA, and the parties involved. On the issue of what do we do with the penalties and the fines, I said the CFO will answer that. Doubt.
Chair, on page 118 of the annual report in the financial section, you will find an item called a discretionary reserve. That's where all the fines end up. They specifically cannot be used for FSB operations. The Minister of Finance in 2002 issued a directive. Those funds can only be used for repatriation of victims of those offences, or for consumer education related activities, and that's audited accordingly. Also, Chair, on page 151 under note 29, we also run a trust account where we receive all the fines in relation to the direct of market abuse offences, and that account is separately maintained and is only used to repatriate victims of market manipulation offences. I hope that answers that question.
Good. The financial statement, the deficits and the expenditure question.
Let me just, okay. Chair, how the FSB operates, the FSB has to go to the industry every year to raise levies to fund its operations. Because over the years it has built a buffer in terms of its reserves, in terms of forecasting specific activities, from year to year we have to ensure that our levies are not drastically increased and we dip into our reserves. So on an ongoing basis, in some specific years, we do go into the deficit basis, but we do ensure that our reserves are sufficient to maintain that. That's why you would see the reserve. It technically does mean that we spent more money than we've received, but we always do ensure that we can afford that. And so in real fact, it can be termed a loss, but it's an affordable loss.
We have enough reserves in our ports to be able to afford that.
Don't respond to Howland. Yeah, otherwise we'll get into trouble.
Noted.
Okay.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I hope we have answered that one. The other question that I needed to answer was about the 190 million rand that has been recovered, whether there's still more to come. Honorable Member, there is still more to come, but we need to go to court to fight for it. There is still money to fight for. on the question of 1.9 billion rand, where FSB has been sued with, together with other 18 respondents. On this one, the matter, all I can say, honorable member, is this matter is at a very, very sensitive stage, which I can possibly tell honorable members in camera. And but it's been managed very well. Thank you. The question on...
Chair, I think, we must indicate, if it is before the courts, even in camera, it's difficult. It is before the courts. I think we should... Thanks. I don't want to use that educated word.
We won't switch on our cameras then.
On the consumer education matters, there was a question as to whether there's a bursary scheme for the children of the employees of the FSB. There is not. And we're not even looking at that possibility. Then the other question was why certain areas of reaching on consumer education and not others. I'm going to ask Ms. Olivia Davis to respond, but before she does that, I'll just want to say honorable members will also appreciate the fact that there is no specific fund for consumer education responsibility at the FSB. We rely solely, as the CFO said, on the penalties accumulated, and that's not always enough to make us reach the ends of the world. And this is why you'll recall from time to time I've been saying we need to possibly shift from relying on penalties, because this is a very important matter, as you say, moving away from the mercy of being under the mercy of penalties towards a clear levy system, so that we know there's money coming, we have to deal with consumer education. But I guess we will have to make a presentation at some stage for that. Ma'am Olivia.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, with respect to the computer education programs that we are doing in partnership with the SAHIA, they are all done at taxi ranks across the country. And in some cases, a couple of years ago, we did actually try to focus on deep rural areas for taxi education, but we found from our comments and so on that they consumers in those areas are better served in their own languages in face-to-face workshops and so on. So we've moved to that way of interacting with consumers. We use many different methodologies for working with consumers. We do, as we've indicated earlier, a lot of radio programming in the official languages and so on, so that we are able to reach as many people as possible. In terms of why we are focusing in some cases on urban centers such as Polokwane and so on, the reason for that is that many of the rural commuters travel through the taxi ranks in the urban centers. So although the taxi ranks are in the urban centers, we are also reaching rural commuters as well. There was another question on why we are not using electronic media and in education and so on, and I'm going to interpret that to mean social media, such as Facebook and so on. We are investigating that possibility. We also have to be sure that it's in keeping with the regulatory policies of the FSB, but it is in process, Chair.
Thank you, Olivia.
I just want to make a follow-up on this consumer education. You mentioned the program that is piloted in KwaZulu-Natal, that soon you'll be handing it over to the education department. I just want to check if you have plans for aftercare, or you are just going to, after handing over, you will have nothing to do with that program, and the education will do whatever they want to do with that project.
Chairperson, honorable members, we, as part of the discussions, we will need to actually decide on all those matters. The FSB is always available to be a resource to any department or any community organization as they implement programs. We certainly do not want to just hand it over and without people maybe having the resources or the expertise necessary to implement. So certainly we will be available, and as part of the discussions, we will then agree on some plan of action of that sort.
Thank you, Chair. Before I hand over to Mr. Boyd for retirement issues, I want to respond to the question posed by Honourable Member George there about the remuneration issues. There is a remuneration policy in place, and it is based on the fact that the FSB Act clearly states that FSB salaries must be market related. Therefore, every year you look at what the market says, and we don't look at the market ourselves. We go to the professionals and tell us what the market is. They say, this is the market, this is what needs to be done, and we do exactly that. And this policy is, of course, managed by the independent board of the FSB. Then the retirement issue, starting with the reports from the curators and all that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair, Honourable Members. With regard to reports and curators' reports, whilst I'm obviously speaking from experience from curators of pension funds, but I think it applies across the other departments in FSB. Generally, when we apply for a curatorship, part of the curatorship order would stipulate a reporting requirement by the curators, firstly to court, and secondly to the relevant registrar. And so it's actually contained in a court order. Obviously, we tend to get clever after a while, because what we've realized that is that those court orders were not specific requiring written reports. And now in our orders, and even when we go to court to effect changes, we now specifically require written reports. So largely, insofar as the curators' reports to courts, they've all been received. That's been fully complied with. And with regard to the curators' reports to the registrar, those are a mix of written reports as well as instances where we'll have meetings and no formal written report. Just to deal with the 950-odd million that has been recovered as part of the so-called Govalis transactions, the process for that distribution of money, as the EO has pointed out, it has to follow our process of surplus apportionment before the final distribution can take place. As we speak now, we have received and have approved the surplus apportionment for the Mitchell Cotts funds that was part of that surplus stripping. And the curator is currently working on attending to the valuation reports, which first we got approved, and then the surplus apportionment schemes for all the other funds. So it's in the pipeline as we speak. The issue on pensions data and why it's reported at 2009, unfortunately we got a bit of an anomaly in our legal requirements, which states that pension funds have 6 months from the end of each calendar year to submit their financial statements. So the calendar year concerned here was 31st, I'm sorry, the our year end in this particular period was 31st March 2011, and the funds have got until 30th of June 2011 to submit. So that's the issue why we've got a bit of a lag. They all tend to submit right at the end. The issue around smaller funds, it's an ongoing issue from our perspective. We find particularly difficult in them complying with statutory requirements to submit financials. put forward various reasons for it, sometimes blaming it on the cost of requirement for an audit, sometimes on the fact that they just not in a position to finalize because the accounting records are not up to date, and there are various reasons why we picked this up. We've in fact instituted a quite a stringent penalty regime for late submission, and we're hoping that that will act as a deterrent to increase the submission rate. There was a question raised on the retirement funds and the issue around why they did not achieve their performance target on page 153. Just want to pull it out. We had a 73% achievement of all our scheduled visits. The scheduled visits actually comes out as a result of our risk-based supervisory approach. That's when that would identify the number of funds that we going to visit. The reason that we stipulated there is that the actual in that particular year there were visits to the very large administrators. And the time that was estimated for those on-site visits was way under, large underestimate, so we had to use additional time. And we also used our staff in this particular enforcement division on assisting on inspections. And as a result, there was a bit of a staff constraint in the department. I think those were the questions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. There are just two remaining questions, and the first one to be dealt with is Jonathan, the unregistered insurance business.
Thank you. Very, very briefly. It depends on where the unregistered business is being set up. So if it's in Gauteng, we would advertise in the Zowetan and the Daily, and if it's somewhere else, more nationally, the Daily Sun. But if it was in a particular region where there was a good distribution of a particular newspaper, we would advertise there.
Thank you. The last question from the first batch of questions, it was about the Audit and Risk Committee members, and specifically Mr. Hawksworth and Mr. Professor Ngube. Indeed, for a long time there was two open spaces for these honourable members, but we must take into account that the Audit and Risk Committee is a subcommittee of the board, therefore it's made up of board members who are appointed by National Treasury Minister of Finance. The requests were made and the process took slightly longer, but the work continues and everything is now back in order. Other board members have been appointed. Thank you very much.
I just need to fix up the possible misconception on slide 12 around Mark's question around other staff expenses. It's just me using accounting language. It's supposed to mean other staff members' salaries other than the executive. So that 228 million is for the other 450 odd FSB staff members' staff benefits. It's not just general expenses.
It's always important to call you and explain what you have written in this document. Do you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. The last word is that I trust that the Financial Services Board was able to respond to questions, but if there are any other questions that the committee still would like further explanation, as if we've always tried, the request is that we request that your administration submits them to us in writing and give us a time frame for us to respond so that we do not wait for the next annual reporting cycle to come back to you. But also I would want to say I also trust that this was the annual report is intended to give a true reflection of the situation at the board. And where there are failures, I think we were open enough, and also where there are achievements, I trust that the committee will give us a
Chairperson, that for purposes of this engagement, we want to take this opportunity to thank you for affording us the opportunity and promise to do our level best to deal with issues, particularly on behalf of the executive authority, to ensure that whatever has not been addressed gets addressed. But can I also make an appeal, Chairperson? In some instances, some of the questions that arise in these instances are questions that arise as a result of what is in the public domain, in the media and elsewhere. I would want to believe that honorable members will be honorable enough not to allow people who are charged for some of these cases that seek to undermine our financial system to find space in our engagements, other than, because I would imagine committee members know better than what is in the media, and I would just want to appeal. Yes.
Thank you, DM. I want to assure you that so far we have exactly behaved in that manner. Thank you very much, DM, and your team for your thorough explanation to the questions that the honorable members have asked to the team. But I think it's also important as this body to also add our voice in congratulating you in the manner in which you, you are conducting yourself, especially in managing the public funds. I think that it is very important for us to mention in this meeting. We will proceed.